shoulder of a ram-faced Trolloc, shearing its arm free. The thing yelled and fell to its knees, and Aerith kicked it in the face, throwing it back into the legs of a Trolloc behind. Loyal did not stop his song, the call to blood, to death. Let them hear. Let them hear. Swing after swing. Chopping dead wood, that was all this was. Dead, rotting, horrible wood. He and Aerith fell into place with Elder Hammond, who, with ears laid back, looked utterly fierce. Placid Elder Hammond. He felt the rage, too. A beleaguered line of white cloaks, whom the Ogier had relieved, stumbled back, making way for the Ogier. He sang and fought and roared and killed, hacking at Trollocs with an axe meant for cutting wood and never flesh. Working with wood was a reverent business. This was killing weeds, poisonous weeds, strangling weeds. He continued to chop the Trollocs, losing him fought and roared and killed, hacking at Trollocs with an axe meant for cutting wood and never flesh. Working with wood was a reverent business. This was killing weeds, poisonous weeds, strangling weeds. He continued to chop the Trollocs, losing himself in the call to blood, to death. The Trollocs began to fear. He saw terror in their beady eyes, and he loved it. They were used to fighting men who were smaller than themselves. Well, let the Trollocs fight someone their own size. They snarled as the Ogier line forced them back. Loyal landed blow after blow, shearing through arms, hacking through torsos. He shoved his way between two bear Trollocs, laying about him with his axe, yelling in fury. Fury now for what the Trollocs had done to the Ogier. They should be enjoying the peace of the steading. They should be able to build, sing, and grow. They could not. Because of these weeds, they could not. The Ogier were forced to kill. The Trollocs made builders into destroyers. They forced Ogier and humans to be like themselves. The call to blood, to death. Well, the Shadow would see just how dangerous the Ogier could be. They would fight, and they would kill. And they would do it better than any human Trolloc or Murdrol could imagine. By the fear Loyal saw in the Trollocs, by their terrified eyes, they were beginning to understand. "Light!" Galad exclaimed, falling back from the thick of the fight. "Light!" The Ogier attack was terrible and glorious. The creatures fought with ears drawn back, eyes wide, broad faces flat as anvils. They seemed to transform, all placidity gone. They cut through ranks of Trollocs, hacking the beasts to the ground. The second row of Ogier, made up mostly of females, sliced up Trollocs with long knives, bringing down any who made it through the first line. Galad had thought Trollocs fearsome, with their twisted mix of human and animal features. But the Ogier disturbed him more. Trollocs were simply horrible. But Ogier were gentle, soft-spoken, kindly. Seeing them enraged, bellowing their terrible song and attacking with axes nearly as long as men were tall. Light! Galad waved the children back, then ducked as a Trolloc slammed into a tree nearby. Some of the Ogier were seizing wounded Trollocs by their arms and hurling them out of the way. Many of the other Ogier were blood-soaked to their waists, hacking and chopping like butchers preparing meat. Now and then one of them fell, but unarmored though they were, their skin seemed tough. "Light," Trom said, moving up to Galad. "Have you ever seen anything like that?" Galad shook his head. It was the most honest answer he could think of. "If we had an army of those," Trom said.
"They're dark friends," Gulliver said, joining them. "Shadowspawn for certain."
"Ogier are no more Shadowspawn than I am," Galad said dryly. "Look."
They're slaughtering the Trollocs.
Any moment now, they'll all turn on us, Gulliver said. Watch.
He trailed off, listening to the Ogier chant their war song. One large group of Trollocs broke, fleeing back around cursing Murdral. The Ogier didn't let them go. Enraged, the giant builders chased after the Trollocs, long-handled axes chopping their legs, dropping them in sprays of blood and cries of agony.
Well, Trom asked.
Maybe, Gulliver said.
Maybe it's a scheme of some kind, to gain our trust.
Don't be a fool, Gulliver, Trom said.
I'm not. Galad held up a hand.
Gather our wounded. Let's head toward the bridge.
Rand let the swirling colors fade from his vision.
It is nearly time for me to go, he said.
To battle? Nynaeve asked.
No. To Mat. He is in Ebu Dar.
He had returned from Elaine's camp to Marilor. The conversation with Tam still bounced around in his head.
Let go.
It wasn't nearly so easy. And yet something had lifted from him in speaking with his father.
Let go.
There seemed a depth to Tam's words, one far beyond the obvious. Rand shook his head. He couldn't afford to waste time on such thoughts. The last battle. It had to claim his attention.
I have been able to draw close without drawing attention, he thought, fingering the deerhorn-hilted dagger at his belt. It seems to be true. The Dark One can't sense me when I carry this.
Before he could move against the Dark One, he had to do something about the Seanchan. If what Tom said was true, Mat might be the key. The Seanchan had to join the dragon's peace. If they did not...
That is an expression I remember, a soft voice said. Consternation. You do it so well, Randolph Thor.
He turned toward Moraine. Beyond her, on the table in his tent, maps that Avienda had sent by messenger showed positions where his army could gather in the Blight. Moraine stepped up beside Rand.
Did you know that I used to spend hours in thought, trying to discover what that mind of yours was conjuring? It is a wonder I did not pull every hair from my head in frustration.
I was a fool for not trusting you, Rand said. She laughed. A soft laugh, the laugh of an Aes Sedai who was in control.
You trusted me enough.
That was what made it all the more frustrating that you would not share. Rand breathed in deeply. The air here at Marilor was sweeter than in other places. He had coaxed the land here back to life. Grass grew. Flowers budded.
Tree stumps and men, he said to Moraine. The Two Rivers has both, and one is about as likely to budge as the other.
Perhaps that is too harsh, Moraine said. It was not merely stubbornness that drove you. It was a will to prove to yourself, and to everyone else, that you could do this on your own.
She touched his arm.
But you cannot do this on your own. Can you?
Rand shook his head. He reached up to Kalendor, strapped on his back, touching it. The sword's final secret lay bare to him now. It was a trap, and a clever one. For this weapon was a Saw-Ungrial, not for just the one power, but for the true power as well. He had thrown away the access key, but on his back he carried something so very tempting. The true power, the Dark One's essence, was the sweetest thing he had ever touched. With Kalendor he could draw it forth in strength such as no man had ever before felt. Because Kalendor lacked the safety measures of most other Ungrial and Saw-Ungrial, there was no telling how much of the powers it could draw.
There it is again, Moraine murmured. What are you planning, Randall Thor? Dragon reborn. Can you finally let go enough to tell me? He eyed her. Did you set this entire conversation up to pull that secret from me?
You think very highly of my conversational abilities.
An answer that says nothing, Rand said.
Yes, Moraine said. But might I point out that you did it first in deflecting my question?
Rand thought back a few steps in the conversation and realized he'd done just that.
I'm going to kill the Dark One, Rand said. I'm not just going to seal up the Dark One. I'm going to end him.
I thought you had grown up while I was away, Moraine said. Only Perrin grew up, Rand said. Matt and I have simply learned to pretend to be grown up. He hesitated. Matt did not learn it so well.
The Dark One is beyond killing, Moraine said.
I think I can do it, Rand said. I remember what Luz Theron did, and there was a moment, a brief moment. It can happen, Moraine. I'm more confident that I can do that than I am that I could seal the Dark One away. That was true, though he had no real confidence that he could manage either. Questions. So many questions. Shouldn't he have some answers by now?
The Dark One is part of the wheel, Moraine said.
No, the Dark One is outside the pattern, Rand countered. Not part of the wheel at all.
Of course the Dark One is part of the wheel, Rand, Moraine said. We are the threads that make up the pattern's substance, and the Dark One affects us. You cannot kill him. That is a fool's task.
I have been a fool before, Rand said, and I shall be one again. At times, Moraine, my entire life, all that I've done, feels like a fool's task. What is one more impossible challenge? I've met all the others. Perhaps I can accomplish this one, too. She tightened her grip on his arm.
You have grown so much, but you are still just a youth, are you not?
Rand immediately seized control of his emotions and did not lash back at her. The surest way to be thought of as a youth was to act like one. He stood straight-backed and spoke softly.
I have lived for 4 centuries, he said. Perhaps I am still a youth, in that all of us are compared to the timeless age of the wheel itself. That said, I am one of the oldest people in existence.
Moraine smiled.
Very nice. Does that work on the others?
He hesitated. Then oddly, he found himself grinning. It worked pretty well on Cadswain.
Moraine sniffed. That one. Well, knowing her, I doubt you fooled her as well as you assume. You may have the memories of a man 4 centuries old, Randall Thor, but that does not make you ancient. Otherwise, Matrim Cawthon would be the patriarch of us all.
Matt? Why Matt?
It is nothing, Moraine said. Something I am not supposed to know. You are still a wide-eyed sheepherder at heart. I would not have it any other way. Luz Theron, for all of his wisdom and power, could not do what you must. Now, if you would be kind, fetch me some tea.
Yes, Moraine, said I, he said, immediately starting toward the teapot over the fire. He froze, then looked back at her. She glanced at him slyly.
Merely seeing if that still worked.
I never fetched you tea, Rand protested, walking back to her. As I remember, I spent our last few weeks together ordering you around.
So you did, Moraine said. Think about what I said regarding the Dark One. But now I ask you a different question. What will you do now? Why go to Ebu Dar?
The Seanchan, Rand said. I must try to bring them to our side, as I promised.
If I remember, Moraine said, you did not promise that you would try. You promised that you would make it happen.
Promises to try don't achieve much in political negotiations, Rand said, no matter how sincere. He held up his hand before him, arm outstretched, fingers up, and looked out of his open tent flaps, as if he were preparing to grab the lands to the south, scoop them up, claim them as his, protect them. The dragon on his arm shone, gold and crimson.
"Once the dragon, for remembrance lost."
He held up his other arm, ending at the stump near the wrist.
"Twice the dragon, for the price he must pay."
"What will you do if the Shonchan leader refuses again?" Moraine asked. He hadn't told her that the Empress had refused him the first time. Moraine didn't need to be told things. She simply discovered them.
"I don't know," Rand said softly. "If they don't fight, Moraine, we will lose. If they don't join the dragon's peace, then we have nothing."
"You spent too much time on that pact," Moraine said. "It distracted you from your goal. The dragon does not bring peace but destruction. You cannot change that with a piece of paper."
"We shall see," Rand said. "Thank you for your advice. Now and always. I don't believe I have said that enough. I owe you a debt, Moraine."
"Well," she said, "I am still in need of a cup of tea." Rand looked at her, incredulous. Then he laughed and walked away to bring her some.
Moraine held her warm cup of tea, which Rand had fetched for her before leaving. He had become ruler of so much since they had parted, and he was as humble now as when she had first found him in the Two Rivers, maybe more so. "Humble toward me, perhaps," she thought. "He believes he can slay the Dark One. That is not the sign of a humble man." Randall Thor, such an odd mixture of self-effacement and pride. Did he finally have the balance right? Despite what she had said, his action toward her today proved he was no youth, but a man. A man could still make mistakes. Often they were of a more dangerous sort. "The wheel weaves as the wheel wills," she murmured to herself, sipping the tea. Prepared by Rand's hand and not someone else's, it was as flavorful and vibrant as it had been during better days, not touched in the least bit by the Dark One's shadow. Yes, the wheel wove as it willed. Sometimes she wished that weaving were easier to understand.
"Everyone knows what to do?" Lan asked, turning in Mandarb's saddle. Andir nodded. He'd carried the word himself to the rulers, and from them it had gone to their generals and commanders. Only at the last moments had it been passed to the soldiers themselves. There would be Dark Friends among them. There always were. It was impossible to exterminate rats from a city, no matter how many cats you brought in. The Light willing, this news would come too late for those rats to give warning to the Shadow. "We ride," Lan said, setting heels into Mandarb's ribs. Andir raised his banner high, the flag of Malkir, and galloped at his side. He was joined by his ranks of Malkieri. Many of those had only a little Malkieri blood in them, and were truly borderlanders of other nations. They still chose to ride beneath his banner, and had taken up the Hadori. Thousands upon thousands of horsemen rode with him, hooves shaking the soft earth. It had been a long, hard retreat for their army. The Trollocs had superior numbers and presented a serious threat of surrounding Lan's men. Lan's mounted army was highly mobile, but there was only so much speed you could force upon soldiers, and Trollocs could march quickly, faster than people could, particularly with those fades whipping them. Fortunately, the fires in the countryside were slowing the Shadow's army. Without that, Lan's men might not have been able to escape. Lan crouched in the saddle as the explosions from the Dreadlords began. To his left, the Ashaman Deep rode, tied to his saddle because of his missing leg. As a ball of fire crackled through the air and arced down toward Lan, Deep adopted a look of concentration and thrust his hands forward.
The fire exploded in the air above them. Burning embers fell like crimson rain trailing smoke. One hit Mandarb's neck, and Lan brushed it aside with a gauntleted hand. The horse didn't seem to notice. The ground here was of deep clay. The terrain consisted of rolling hills, covered with sere grass, rocky outcrops, and groves of defoliated trees. The retreat followed the banks of the Mora. The river would prevent the Trollocs flanking them from the west. Smoke bled from two distinct points on the horizon, Feldara and Felmoran, the two grandest cities in Shinar, torched by their own people, along with the lands of their farms and orchards, everything that could provide even a handful of sustenance to the invading Trollocs. Holding the cities had not been an option. That meant they had to be destroyed. It was time to start hitting back. Lan led a charge at the center of the mass, and the Trollocs set spears against the oncoming rush of Malkieri and Shinaran heavy cavalry. Lan brought his lance down, setting it in position along Mandarb's neck. He leaned forward in his stirrups, holding tightly with his knees, and hoped that the channelers, Lan now had 14, after a small reinforcement from Egwene, could do their part. The ground ripped up before the Trollocs. The front line of Trollocs broke. Lan chose his target, a massive boar Trolloc that was yelling at its companions as they shied away from the explosions. Lan took the creature in the neck. The lance pierced it, and Mandarb threw the Trolloc to the side while trampling one of the cowering beasts nearby. The roar of the cavalry became a crash as the riders hit hard, letting momentum and weight carry them into the thick of the Trollocs. Once they slowed, Lan tossed the lance to Andir, who caught it deftly. Lan's guards moved in, and he slipped his sword from its sheath. Woodsman tops the sapling, apple blossom on the wind. The Trollocs made for easy targets when he was in the saddle. The Trollocs' height presented their necks, shoulders, and faces at just the right level. It was quick, brutal work. Deep watched for attacks from the enemy dreadlords, countering them. Andir moved up to Lan's side. Lan's banner was a lodestone for the Shadowspawn. They began to roar and rage, and he heard two Trolloc words spoken over and over in their language. Murdrukar, Murdrukar, Murdrukar. He laid about himself with his sword, spilling their blood coldly within the void. They had taken Malkier from him twice now. They would never be able to taste his sense of defeat, his sense of loss at leaving his homeland again, this time by choice. But by the light, he could bring them close to it. His sword through their chests would do that best. The battle descended into chaos, as so many did. The Trollocs fell into frenzy. His army had spent the last 4 days not engaging the beasts at all. They had only retreated, finally having gained some control over their withdrawal, enough to avoid clashes, at least, which their fires had made possible. 4 days without a conflict. Now this all-out attack. That was the first piece of the plan.
Dashan!
Someone called. Prince Kaisel. He pointed to where the Trollocs had managed to divide Lan's guard. His banner was tipping. Andir. The man's horse fell, pulled down as Lan urged Mandarb between two Trollocs. Prince Kaisel and a handful of other soldiers joined him. Lan couldn't continue on horseback, lest he accidentally trample his friend. He threw himself from the saddle, hit the ground, and crouched beneath a Trolloc swing. Kaisel took that beast's leg off at the knee. Lan dashed past the falling Trolloc. He saw his banner and a body beside it. Alive or dead, Lan did not know, but there was a Murdral raising a dark blade. Lan arrived in a rush of wind and spinning steel. He blocked the Fakandar blade with a swing of his own, trampling his own banner as he fought. Within the void there was no time for thought. There was only instinct and action. There was a second Murdral rising up from behind Andir's fallen horse. So, a trap. Take down the banner, draw Lan's attention. The two fades attacked, one from each side. The void did not shake. A sword could not feel fear, and for that moment Lan was the sword. The heron spreads its wings, slashing all around him, blocking their blades with his own back and forth. The Murdral were like water, flowing, But Lan was the wind itself. He spun between their blades, knocking back the attack to the right, then the one to the left. The Fades began cursing in fury. The one to his left rushed Lan, a sneer on its pale lips. Lan stepped to the side, then parried the creature's thrust and lopped its arm off at the elbow. He continued in a fluid stroke, his swing continuing to where he knew the other Fade would be attacking, and took its hand off at the wrist. Both Thakandar blades clanged to the ground. The Fades froze, stupefied for a second. Lan cut the head of one from its neck, then twisted and drove his sword through the neck of the other. Black pebbles on the snow. He stepped back and swiped his sword to the side to spray some of the deadly blood free of the blade. Both Fades fell, thrashing, flailing at one another, mindless, dark blood staining the ground. A good 150 Trollocs nearby fell writhing to the ground. They'd been linked to the Fades. Lan stepped over to haul Andir out of the mud. The man looked dazed, blinking, and his arm hung at a strange angle. Lan tossed Andir over his shoulder and kicked his banner by its staff up into his free hand. He ran back toward Mandarb, the area around him now clear of Trollocs, and handed the banner to one of Prince Kaisel's men.
"See that cleaned? Then raise it."
He slung Andir across the front of his saddle, mounted, and wiped his sword on his saddle blanket. The man didn't look mortally wounded. He faintly heard Prince Kaisel behind.
"By my fathers," the man said. "I'd heard he was good, but... but light..."
"This will do," Lan said, surveying the battlefield, releasing the void. "Send the signal deep."
The Ashaman complied, sending a red streak of light into the air. Lan turned Mandarb and pointed his sword back toward the camp. His forces rallied around him. Their attack had always been meant to be a hit and retreat. They hadn't maintained a solid battle line. That was difficult with a cavalry charge. His troops pulled back and the Saldaeans and Arathelan arrived, riding in quick waves to break up the Trolloc lines and protect the retreat. Mandarb was wet with sweat. Carrying two armored men was a difficult order for the horse following a charge. Lan slowed the pace, now that they were out of direct harm.
"Deep?" Lan asked as they reached the back lines. "How is Andir?"
"He has a few broken ribs, a broken arm, and a head injury," Deep said. "I'd be surprised if he could count to 10 on his own right now, but I've seen worse. I'll heal the head wound. The rest can wait."
Lan nodded, reining in. One of his guards, a surly man named Benish, who wore a Terrabonner veil, though he wore a Hadori above it, helped take Andir off Mandarb. They held him up beside Deep's horse. The one-legged Ashaman leaned down from the arrangement of straps that supported him in the saddle, placing his hand on Andir's head and concentrating. The dazed look left Andir's eyes, and awareness took over. Then he started swearing.
"He'll be fine," Lan thought, looking at the battlefield. The Shadowspawn were now falling back. It was near dusk.
Prince Kaisel cantered up beside Lan.
"That Saldaean flag bears the red stripe of the Queen," he said. "She's riding with them again, Lan."
"She is their queen. She can do as she wishes."
"You should talk to her," Kaisel said, shaking his head. "It's not right, Lan. Other women from the Saldaean army are starting to ride with them as well."
"I've seen Saldaean women spar," Lan said, still watching the battlefield. "If I were to place a bet on a contest between one of them and a man from any army in the south, I'd bet on the Saldaean any day."
"But..."
"This war is everything or nothing. If I could round up each woman in the borderlands and put a sword in her hands, I would. For now, I'll settle for not doing something stupid, like forbidding some trained and passionate soldiers from fighting. If you, however, decide not to exercise that prudence, you are free to tell them what you think. I promise to give you a good burial once they let me take your head down off the pole."
"I..." "Yes, Lord Mandragoran," Kaisel said.
Lan took out his spyglass and surveyed the field.
"Lord Mandragoran," Kaisel said, "do you really think this plan will work?"
"There are too many Trollocs," Lan said. The leaders of the Dark One's armies have been breeding them for years, growing them like weeds. Trollocs eat a lot. Each one requires more food than a man to keep it going. By now, they must have eaten the blight out of anything that could sustain them. The Shadow expended every bit of food they could to create this army, counting on the Trollocs being able to eat the corpses of the fallen. Sure enough, now that the battle had broken off, the Trollocs swarmed the field in their gruesome scavenging. They preferred human meat, but would eat their own fallen. Lan had spent 4 days running before their army, not giving them any bodies to feast upon. They had managed it only because of the burning of Feldara and Felmaran, and other cities in western Shinar. Scouring those cities for food had slowed the Trollocs, allowing Lan's army to get its feet underneath it and organize its retreat. The Shinarans had left nothing edible in any of the nearby cities. 4 days without food. The Trollocs didn't use supply lines. They ate what they came across. They'd be starving. Ravenous. Lan studied them with his spyglass. Many did not wait for the cookpots. They were far more animal than they were human. They're far more shadow than they are either one, Lan thought, lowering his spyglass. His plan was morbid, but the light send it would be effective. His men would fight, and there would be casualties. Those casualties would become the bait for the real battle. No, Lan whispered. Lord Aglamar saw it too. The horns blew and a yellow streak of light rose into the air. Lan turned Mandarb, the horse snorting at the command. He was tired, but so was Lan. Both could stand another battle. They had to.
Tyshar Malkir!
Lan roared, lowering his sword and leading his force back onto the field. All 5 Borderlander armies converged on the fractured Shadowspawn horde. The Trollocs had broken lines completely to fight over the corpses. As Lan thundered toward them, he heard the Murdral yelling, trying to force the Trollocs back into order. It was far too late. Many of the famished beasts didn't look up until the armies were nearly upon them. When Lan's forces hit this time, the effect was very different from before. Earlier, their attack had been slowed by the Trollocs' close ranks, and they had managed to penetrate only 12 paces before being forced to take up swords and axes. This time the Trollocs were spread out. Lan signaled the Shinarans to hit first. Their line was so tight, one would have been hard-pressed to find an opening of more than 2 paces between the horses. That left no room for the Trollocs to run or dodge. The riders trampled them in a thunder of hooves and clanking barding, skewering Trollocs on their lances, firing horsebows, laying about themselves with 2-handed swords. There seemed to be a special viciousness to the Shinarans as they attacked, wearing their open-fronted helmets and armor made up of flat plates. Lan brought his Melchiori cavalry in behind, riding crossfield behind the Shinarans to kill any Trollocs that survived the initial onslaught. Once they'd passed, the Shinarans broke to the right to gather for another pass, but the Arafelan slammed in behind them, slaying more Shadowspawn that were attempting to form up. After them came a wave of Saldaeans crossing as the Melchiori had, then the Kandori sweeping from the other direction. Sweating, sword-arm tired, Lan prepared again. Only then did he realize that Prince Kaisel himself was carrying the banner of Malkir. The lad was young, but his heart was right, though he was somewhat stupid about women. Light, but we all are, in one way or another, Lan thought. Nynaeve's distant emotions in the bond comforted him. He could not sense much over the distance, but she seemed determined. As Lan began his second sweep, the ground started exploding beneath his men. The Dreadlords had finally realized what was happening and had made their way back to the front lines. Lan directed Mandarb around a crater that erupted in the ground just before him, soil spraying across his chest. The Dreadlord's appearance was his signal to stop the sweeps. He wanted to ride in, hit hard, and ride out. To fight the Dreadlords, he'd have to commit all of his channelers, which was something he didn't want to do.
Blood and bloody ashes, Deep swore as Lan rounded another explosion. Lord Mandragoran!
Lan looked back. Deep was slowing his horse.
Keep moving, man,
Lan said, reining in Mandarb.
He signaled for his forces to keep riding, though Prince Kaisel and Lan's battlefield guard stopped with him.
"Oh, light," Deep said, concentrating.
Lan surveyed the scene. Around them, Trollocs lay dead or dying, howling or simply whimpering. To his left, the mass of Shadowspawn were belatedly forming up. They'd have a unified line soon, and if Lan and the others didn't move, they'd find themselves alone in the field. Deep had his eyes on a figure standing atop what appeared to be a large siege engine. It had a flat bed and was perhaps 20 feet tall. A group of Trollocs were heaving it forward, and it rolled on large wooden wheels. Yes, there was a figure up there. There were several of them. Balls of fire began to fall toward the Borderlanders as they rode away, and lightning flashed from the sky. Lan suddenly felt like a target on an archery practice field.
"Deep! It's the Mahale!"
Deep explained. Taim had not been with the enemy army for the last week or so, but now the man had returned, it seemed. It was impossible to tell for sure because of the distance, but the way the man flung weebs in rapid succession, he seemed angry about something.
"Let's ride!"
Lan yelled.
"I could take him," Deep said. "I could—"
Lan saw a flash of light, and suddenly Mandarb reared. Lan cursed, trying to blink the afterimage from his eyes. There was something wrong with his ears, too. Mandarb bucked and curveted, quivering. It took a lot to shake the stallion, but a lightning bolt that close would unnerve any horse. A second flash of lightning threw Lan to the ground. He tumbled, grunting, but something, deep within, knew what to do. When he came to himself, he was already on his feet, dizzy, sword in hand. He groaned, staggering. Hands grabbed him, hauling him up into a saddle. Prince Kaisel, face bloodied from fighting, held the reins. Lan's guard made sure he was steady on his mount as they rode away. He caught sight of Deep's corpse, mangled and lying in pieces, as they fled. Chapter 17. Older, more weathered.
"Was not fruitful, Majesty," the voice said through Matt's doze. Something was pricking Matt's face. This mattress was the absolute worst he had ever slept on. He was going to thrash the innkeeper until he got his money back.
"The assassin is very difficult to follow."
That annoying voice again.
"People he passes do not remember him. If the Prince of the Ravens has information on how the creature may be tracked, I would very much like to hear it."
Why would the innkeeper let these people into Matt's room? He drifted toward consciousness, leaving behind a lovely dream involving Tuon and no cares in the world. He opened a bleary eye, looking up at a cloudy sky. Not an inn's ceiling at all. Bloody ashes, Matt thought, groaning. They had fallen asleep in the gardens. He sat up, finding himself totally bare except for the scarf around his neck. His and Tuon's clothing were spread out beneath them. His face had been in a patch of weeds. Tuon sat beside him, ignoring the fact that she was completely naked, speaking with a member of the Death Watch Guard. Musenge was on one knee, head bowed, face toward the ground. But still...
"Light!"
Matt said, reaching for his clothing. Tuon was sitting on his shirt, and gave him an annoyed look as he tried to yank it free.
"Honored one," the guard said to Matt, face still down. "Greetings upon your waking."
"Tuon, why are you just sitting there?" Matt demanded, finally retrieving his shirt from under that luscious rump.
"As my consort," Tuon said sternly, "you may call me Fortuona or Majesty. I would hate to have you executed before you give me a child, as I am growing fond of you. Regarding this guard, he is of the Death Watch. They are needed to watch me at all times. I have often had them with me when bathing. This is their duty, and his face is averted."
Matt hurriedly began dressing. She started to dress, though not quickly enough for his taste. He did not think much of a guard ogling his wife. The place where they had slept was rimmed by small blue fir trees, an oddity here in the south, perhaps cultivated because they were exotic. Though the needles were browning, they offered some measure of privacy. Beyond the firs was a ring of other trees. Peaches, Matt thought, but it was hard to tell without the leaves. He could barely hear the city waking up outside the garden, and the air smelled faintly of the fir needles. The air was warm enough that sleeping outside had not been uncomfortable, though he was glad to be back in his clothing. A Death Watch Guard officer approached just as Tuon finished dressing. He crunched dried fir needles, bowing low before her.
"Empress, we may have caught another assassin. It is not the creature from last night, as he bears no wounds, but he was trying to sneak into the palace. We thought you might wish to see him before we begin our interrogation."
"Bring him forward," Tuon said, straightening her gown. "And send for General Karid." The officer withdrew, passing Seleucia, who stood near the pathway that led to the clearing. She walked in to stand beside Tuon. Matt put his hat on his head and went up to her other side, setting the Ashendari butt down in the dead grass. Matt felt sorry for this poor fool caught sneaking into the palace. Maybe the man was an assassin, but he could just be a beggar or other fool looking for excitement. Or he could be the Dragon Reborn. Matt groaned. Yes, that was Rand they led along the path. Rand looked older, more weathered than the last time Matt had seen him in person. Of course, he had seen the man recently in those blasted visions. Although Matt had trained himself to stop thinking of Rand to avoid those colors, he still slipped on occasion. Anyway, seeing Rand in person was different. It had been light. How long had it been? The last time I saw him with my own eyes was when he sent me to Saladar after Elaine. That felt like an eternity ago. It had been before he had come to Ebu Dar, before he had seen the Golam for the first time, before Tylan, before Tuon. Matt frowned as Rand was led up to Tuon, his arms bound behind his back. She spoke with Seleucia, wiggling her fingers in their hand talk. Rand did not seem the least bit worried. His face was calm. He wore a nice coat of red and black, a white shirt underneath, black trousers. No gold or jewelry, no weapon at all. "Tuon," Matt began, "that's..." Tuon turned from Seleucia to see Rand.
"Damani," Tuon said, cutting Matt off. "Bring my Damani. Run, Muzikar, run!"
The Death Watch guard stumbled backward, then ran, yelling for the Damani and for Banner General Karid. Rand watched the man go, nonchalant, though he was bound. "You know," Matt thought idly, "he kind of does look like a king." Of course, Rand was mad, most likely. That would explain why he had strolled up to Tuon like this. Either that or Rand was just planning on killing her. Bonds did not matter one bit to a man who could channel. Blood and ashes, Matt thought. How did I end up in this situation? He had done whatever he could to avoid Rand. Rand met Tuon's stare. Matt took a big breath, then jumped in front of her.
"Rand? Rand, here now. Let's be calm."
"Hello, Matt," Rand said, voice pleasant. Light, he was mad. "Thank you for leading me to her."
"Leading you?
What is this?" Tuon demanded. Matt spun.
"I... really, it's just..."
Her stare could have drilled holes into steel.
"You did this," she said to Matt. "You came, you lured me to be affectionate, then you brought him in. Is this true?"
"Don't blame him," Rand said. "The two of us needed to meet again. You know it is true."
Matt stumbled out between them, raising one hand either direction.
"Here now. Both of you, stop. You hear me?"
Something seized Matt, hauling him into the air.
"Stop that, Rand," he said.
"It isn't me," Rand said, adopting a look of concentration.
"Ah, I am shielded."
As Matt hung in the air, he felt at his chest. The medallion. Where was his medallion? Matt stared at Tuon. She looked ashamed for a brief moment, then reaching into the pocket of her gown. She brought out something silver in her hand, perhaps intending to use the medallion as protection against Rand. Brilliant, Matt thought, groaning. She had taken it off him while he slept, and he had not noticed. Bloody brilliant. The weaves of air set him down beside Rand. Karid had returned with Asuldam and Damani. All three were flushed, as if having run quickly. The Damani had been doing the channeling. Tuon looked over Rand and Matt, then began gesturing with hand talk at Seleucia with sharp motions.
Thanks a bundle for this, Matt muttered to Rand. You're such a bloody good friend.
It's good to see you too, Rand said, a hint of a smile on his lips.
Here we go, Matt said with a sigh. You've pulled me into trouble again. You always do this.
I do?
Yes. In Rydion and the Waste, in the Stone of Tyr, back in the Two Rivers. You do realize that I went south instead of coming to your little party with Egwene and Marilor to escape?
You think you could stay away from me? Rand asked, smiling. You really think it would let you?
I could bloody try. No offense, Rand, but you're going to go mad and all.
I figured I'd give you one less friend nearby to kill. You know, save you some trouble. What did you do to your hand, by the way? What did you do to your eye?
A little accident with a corkscrew and 13 angry innkeepers.
The hand? Lost it capturing one of the Forsaken.
Capturing? Matt said. You're growing soft.
Rand snorted. Tell me you've done better.
I killed a golem, Matt said.
I freed Ilion from Samael.
I married the Empress of the Shanchan.
Matt, Rand said, are you really trying to get into a bragging contest with the Dragon Reborn?
He paused for a moment.
Besides, I cleansed Saidin. I win.
Ah, that's not really worth much, Matt said.
Not worth much. It's the single most important event to happen since the breaking.
Bah! You and your Ashaman are already crazy, Matt said. So what does it matter?
He glanced to the side.
You look nice, by the way. You've been taking better care of yourself lately.
So you do care, Rand said.
Of course I do, Matt grumbled, looking back at Tuon. I mean, you have to keep yourself alive, right? Go have your little duel with the Dark One and keep us all safe?
It's good to know you're looking up to it.
That's nice to hear, Rand said, smiling.
No wisecracks about my nice coat?
What? Wisecracks?
You aren't still sore because I teased you a little a couple of years ago.
Teased, Rand said.
You spent weeks refusing to talk to me.
Here now, Matt said. It wasn't all that bad. I remember that part easily.
Rand shook his head as if bemused.
Bloody ungrateful was what he was.
Matt had gone off to fetch Elaine, as Rand had asked, and this was the thanks he was given.
Sure, Matt had been a little sidetracked after that. He had still done it, had he not?
All right, Matt said very softly, tugging at the bonds of air holding him.
I'll get us out of this, Rand. I'm married to her. Let me do the talking and...
Daughter of Arthur Hawkwing, Rand said to Tuon. Time spins toward the end of all things. The last battle has begun, and the threads are being woven. Soon my final trial will begin.
Tuon stepped forward, Seleucia waving a few last finger-talk words toward her.
You will be taken to Shanchan, Dragon Reborn, Tuon said.
Her voice was collected, firm. Matt smiled.
Like, but she made a good empress.
There was no need to filch my medallion, though, he thought. They were going to have words about that. Assuming he survived this. She would not really execute him, would she? Again, he tried the invisible bonds tying him.
Is that so? Rand asked.
You have delivered yourself to me, Tuon said. It is an omen.
She seemed almost regretful.
You did not truly think that I would allow you to stroll away, did you? I must take you in chains as a ruler who resisted me,
as I have done to the others I found here. You pay the price of your ancestors' forgetfulness. You should have remembered your oaths.
I see, Ram said.
You know, Matt thought, he does a fair job of sounding like a king, too. Light, what kind of people had Matt surrounded himself with? What happened to the fair barmaids and carousing soldiers?
Tell me something, Empress, Rand said. What would you all have done if you'd returned to these shores and found Arthur Hawkwing's armies still ruling? What if we hadn't forgotten our oaths? What if we had stayed true? What then?
We would have welcomed you as brothers, Tuon said.
Oh, Rand said. And you would have bowed to the throne here? Hawkwing's throne? If his empire still stood, it would have been ruled over by his heir. Would you have tried to dominate them? Would you instead have accepted their rule over you?
That is not the case, Tuon said, but she seemed to find his words intriguing.
No, it is not, Rand said.
By your argument, you must submit to us, she smiled.
I did not make that argument, Rand said. But let us do so. How do you claim the right to these lands?
By being the only legitimate heir of Arthur Hawkwing.
And why should that matter?
This is his empire. He is the only one to have unified it. He is the only leader to have ruled it in glory and greatness.
And there you are wrong, Rand said, voice growing soft. You accept me as the dragon reborn.
You must be, Tuon said slowly, as if wary of a trap.
Then you accept me for who I am, Rand said, voice growing loud, crisp, like a battle horn. I am Luz Theron Telamon, the dragon. I ruled these lands, unified during the Age of Legends. I was leader of all the armies of the Light. I wore the Ring of Tamerlan. I stood first among the servants, highest of the Aes Sedai, and I could summon the Nine Rods of Dominion. Rand stepped forward. I held the loyalty and fealty of all 17 generals of Dawn's Gate. Fortuna Athaem Devi Payendrag. My authority supersedes your own.
Arthur Hawkwing,
my authority supersedes that of Hawkwing. If you claim rule by the name of he who conquered, then you must bow before my prior claim. I conquered before Hawkwing, though I needed no sword to do so. You are here on my land, Empress, at my sufferance.
Thunder broke in the distance. Matt found himself shaking. Light, it was just Rand. Just Rand, was it not?
Tuon backed away, eyes wide, her lips parted. Her face was full of horror, as if she had just seen her own parents executed. Green grass spread around Rand's feet. The guards nearby jumped back, hands to swords, as a swath of life extended from Rand. The brown and yellow blades colored, as if paint had been poured on them. Then came upright, stretching as if after long slumber. The greenness filled the entire garden clearing.
He's still shielded, the Suldam cried. Honored one, he is still shielded.
Matt shivered, and then noticed something. Very soft, so easy to miss.
Are you singing? Matt whispered to Rand.
Yes, it was unmistakable. Rand was singing, under his breath, very softly. Matt tapped his foot.
I swear I've heard that tune somewhere once. Is it Two Maids at the Water's Edge?
You're not helping, Rand whispered. Quiet. Rand continued his song. The green spread to the trees, the firs strengthening their limbs. The other trees began to shoot out leaves. They were indeed peach trees, growing at great speed, life flooding into them. The guards looked about themselves, spinning,
trying to watch all of the trees at once. Seleucia had cringed. Tuon remained upright, her eyes focused on Rand. Nearby, the frightened Suldam and Damani must have stopped concentrating, for the bonds holding Matt vanished.
"Do you deny my right?" Rand demanded. "Do you deny that my claim to this land precedes your own by thousands of years?"
"I..." Tuon took a deep breath and stared at him defiantly. "You broke the land, abandoned it. I can deny your right." Behind her, blossoms exploded onto the trees like fireworks, white and deep pink. The bursts of color surrounded them. Petals sprayed outward with their growth, breaking from the trees, catching in the wind, and swirling through the clearing.
"I allowed you to live," Rand said to Tuon, "when I could have destroyed you in an instant. This is because you have made life better for those under your rule, though you are not without guilt for the way you have treated some. Your rule is as flimsy as paper. You hold this land together only through the strength of steel and Damani, but your homeland burns. I have not come here to destroy you. I come to you now to offer you peace, Empress. I have come without armies. I have come without force. I have come because I believe that you need me as I need you."
Rand stepped forward and, remarkably, went down on one knee, bowing his head, his hand extended.
"I extend my hand to you in alliance. The last battle is upon us. Join me and fight."
The clearing fell still. The wind stopped blowing, the thunder stopped rumbling. Peach blossoms wafted to the now green grass. Rand remained where he was, hand extended. Tuon stared at that hand as if at a viper. Matt hurried forward.
"Nice trick," he said under his breath to Rand. "Very nice trick."
He approached Tuon, taking her by the shoulders and turning her to the side. Nearby, Seleucia looked stunned. Kareed was not in much better shape. They would not be any help.
"Hey, look," Matt said to her softly. "He's a good fellow. He's rough at the corners sometimes, but you can trust his word. If he's offering you a treaty, he'll make good on it." "That was a very impressive display," Tuon said softly.
She was trembling faintly.
"What is he?"
"Burn me if I know," Matt said. "Listen, Tuon, I grew up with Rand. I vouch for him."
"There is a darkness in that man, Matrim. I saw it when last he and I last met. Look at me, Tuon. Look at me."
She looked up, meeting his gaze.
"You can trust Randall Thor with the world itself," Matt said. "And if you can't trust him, trust me. He's our only choice. We don't have time to take him back to Shonchan. I've been in the city long enough to have a little peek at your forces. If you're going to fight the last battle and recapture your homeland, you're going to need a stable base here in Altara. Take his offer. He just claimed this land. Well, make him secure your borders as they are and announce it to the others. They might listen. Take a little pressure off you. Unless, that is, you want to fight the Trollocs, the nations of this land, and the rebels in Shonchan at the same time."
Tuon blinked.
"Our forces."
"What?"
"You called them my forces," she said. "They are our forces. You are one of us now, Matrim."
"Well, I guess I am at that. Listen, Tuon, you have to do this.
Please."
She turned, looking at Rand, kneeling in the middle of a pattern of peach blossoms that seemed to have circled out from him. Not a one had fallen on him.
"What is your offer?"
Tuon asked.
"Peace," Rand said, standing, hand still out. "Peace for 100 years. Longer, if I can make it so. I have persuaded the other rulers to sign a treaty and work together to fight the armies of the Shadow."
"I would have my borders secured," Tuon said.
"Altara and Amadisia shall be yours.
Tarabon and Almuth Plain as well,"
Tuon said. I hold them now. I will not be forced from them by your treaty. You wish peace? You will give me this.
Terabon and half of Almuth Plain, Rand said. The half you already control.
I would have all the women this side of the Arith Ocean who can channel as Domani, Tuon said.
Do not strain your luck, Empress, Rand said dryly. I will allow you to do what you will in Shonchan, but I will require you to relinquish any Domani you have taken while in this land.
Then we have no agreement, Tuon said.
Matt held his breath. Rand hesitated, hand lowering. The fate of the world itself could hang on this, Fortuona. Please.
If it is that important, she said firmly, you can agree to my demand. Our property is our own. You wish a treaty? Then you will get it with this clause. We keep the Domani we already have. In exchange, I will allow you to leave in freedom.
Rand grimaced. You're as bad as one of the sea folk.
I should hope I'm worse, Tuon said,
no emotion in her voice.
The world is your charge, dragon, not mine. I care for my empire. I will greatly need those Domani. Choose now. As I believe you said, your time is short.
Rand's expression darkened, then he thrust his hand outward.
Let it be done. Might be merciful, let it be done. I will carry this weight too. You may keep the Domani you already have, but you shall not take any from among my allies while we fight the last battle. Taking any afterward who are not in your own land will be seen as breaking the treaty and attacking the other nations.
Tuon stepped forward, then took Rand's hand in her own. Matt let out a breath.
I have documents for you to review and sign, Rand said.
Salusha will take them, Tuon said. Matrim, with me. We must prepare the Empire for war.
Tuon walked away down the path, her step controlled, though Matt suspected that she wanted to be away from Rand as quickly as possible. He understood the sentiment. He followed, but stopped beside Rand.
Seems you have a bit of the Dark One's luck yourself, he muttered to Rand. I can't believe that worked.
Honestly, Rand said softly, I can't either. Thank you for the good word.
Sure, Matt said. By the way, I saved Moraine. Chew on that as you try to decide which of the two of us is winning.
Matt followed Tuon, and behind him rose the laughter of the dragon reborn. Chapter 18. To Feel Wasted. Gawain stood on a field near the area where the Aes Sedai had first fought the Trollocs. They'd come off the hills and had moved deeper onto the Kandor Plain. They continued to stem the Trolloc advances, and they even managed to push back the enemy's main forces a few hundred paces. All in all, this battle was going better than could have been expected. They'd fought here for a week on this open, unnamed Kandoran Plain. This place had been churned and torn as if in preparation for planting. There were so many bodies here, almost all Shadow Spawn, that even Trolloc appetites couldn't consume them all. Gawain carried a sword in one hand, shield in the other, stationed in front of Egwene's horse. His job was to bring down the Trollocs that came through the Aes Sedai attacks. He preferred to fight two-handed, but against Trollocs he needed that shield. Some of the others thought him a fool for using the sword. They preferred pikes or halberds, anything to keep the Trollocs at a distance. You couldn't really duel with a pike, though. As a pikeman, you were like a brick in a larger wall. You weren't so much a soldier as a barrier. A halberd was better. At least it had a blade that required some skill to use. But nothing gave the same feel as a sword. When Gawain fought with the sword, he controlled the fight.
A Trolloc came for him, snorting, face bearing the melded features of a ram and a man. This one was more human than most, including a sickeningly human mouth with bloodied teeth. The thing brandished a mace that bore the flame of Tarvalin on its haft, stolen from a fallen member of the Tower Guard. Though it was a two-handed weapon, the creature wielded it easily in one. Gawain dodged to the side, then brought his shield up and to the right under the expected blow. The shield shook with repeated impacts. One, two, three. Standard Trolloc berserking. Hit hard, hit fast, and assumed that the opponent would break. Many did. They would trip, or their arms would go numb from the pounding. That was the value of pike walls or halberd lines. Bryn used both, and a newly improvised half-spear, half-halberd line. Gawain had read of its like in history books. Bryn's army used them for hamstringing Trollocs. The pike lines would keep them back, and then the halberds would reach through and slice their legs. Gawain ducked to the side, and the Trolloc wasn't ready for his burst of speed. The thing turned, too slow, as Gawain separated its hand from its wrist, using whirlwind on the mountain. As it screamed, Gawain spun about, ramming his sword into the stomach of another Trolloc that had plowed through the Aes Sedai defense. He whipped his sword out of that body and sheathed it in the first Trolloc's neck. The dead beast slid off his blade. That was four that Gawain had killed today. He carefully wiped his sword and the bloody cloth he wore tied at his waist. He checked on Egwene. Mounted, she used the one power to rip apart Trollocs in droves. The Aes Sedai used a rotation, with only a small portion of them on the field at a time. Using so few Aes Sedai at a time required the soldiers to take the brunt of the fighting, but the Aes Sedai always came to the battle rested. Their job was to blast apart the groups of Trollocs, shattering lines and letting the soldiers work on the scattered remnants. With the Aes Sedai keeping the Trollocs from solid battle formations, the fight, though grueling, was proceeding well. They hadn't had to fall back since leaving the hills behind, and had effectively stalled the Trolloc advance for a week here. Sylvanna sat atop a roan gelding beside Egwene, and did her best to keep the Trollocs from coming too close. The ground was ripped and furrowed just in front of them, Sylvanna's attacks having torn it asunder, leaving trench-like depressions all over the field. Despite that, the occasional Trolloc would crawl through the mire and come for Gawain. Gawain saw movement in the nearest trench and strode forward. A wolf-featured Trolloc crouched inside. It snarled at him, scrambling up. Water flows downhill. The Trolloc fell back into the trench and Gawain wiped his blade on the bloody rag. Five. Not bad for one of his two-hour shifts. Often the Aes Sedai were able to repel the Trollocs, and he just ended up standing beside Egwene. Of course, today she was accompanied by Sylvanna. They always came to the battlefront in pairs, and Gawain was half convinced the Keeper let a few through now and then just to keep him working. A sudden series of explosions nearby drove him backward, and he glanced over his shoulder. Their relief had arrived. Gawain raised his sword to sleet as the man took up position with Piava Sedai's warder to guard the area. Gawain joined Egwene and Sylvanna as they left the battlefield. He could feel Egwene's growing exhaustion. She was pushing herself too hard, insisting on joining too many shifts. They made their way across the trampled grass, passing a group of Ilioner companions, charging into the fray. Gawain didn't have a good enough view of the battle as a whole to know where specifically they were needed. He watched them go with a hint of envy. He knew Egwene needed him. Now, more than ever. Fades slipped into camp at night, bringing Thakandar-forged blades to take the lives of Aes Sedai. Gawain kept watch personally when Egwene slept, relying on her to wash his fatigue away when it overwhelmed him. He slept when she was in conference with the Hall of the Tower. He insisted that she sleep in a different tent each night. Once in a while he convinced her to travel to Mayenne and the beds in the palace. She hadn't done that in a few days. His arguments that she should check on the yellows and inspect the healing work were growing thin. Rusil Sedai had things in hand there.
Gowan and the two women continued on into the camp. Some soldiers bowed, the ones who were not currently on duty, while others hastened toward the battlefield. Gowan eyed some of these. Too young, too new. Others were dragonsworn, and who knew what to make of them? There were Aiel among the dragonsworn, which made no sense to him, since all Aiel seemed basically dragonsworn to him. But there were also Aes Sedai among the dragonsworn ranks. He didn't think much of their choice. Gowan shook his head and continued on. Their camp was enormous, though it contained virtually no camp followers. Food was brought in daily through gateways and wagons, some pulled by those unreliable metal machines from Kyrian. When those wagons left, they carried away clothing for washing, weapons to be repaired, and boots to be mended. It made for a very efficient camp. One not heavily populated, however, as almost everyone spent long hours on the battlefield fighting. Everyone but Gowan. He knew he was needed, and that what he did was important. But he couldn't help feeling wasted. He was one of the finest swordsmen in the army, and he stood on the battlefield for a few hours a day, killing only the occasional Trolloc stupid enough to charge two Aes Sedai. What Gowan did was more like putting them out of their misery than fighting them. Egwene nodded farewell to Sylvanna, then turned her horse toward the command tent. "Egwene," Gowan said. "I only want to check on things," she said calmly. "Elaine was supposed to have sent new orders."
"You need sleep."
"It seems that all I do these days is sleep."
"When you fight on the battlefield, you are easily worth 1,000 soldiers," Gowan said. "If sleeping 22 hours a day were required to keep you in good enough shape to protect the men for 2, I'd suggest you do it. Fortunately, that isn't required, and neither is it required that you run yourself as hard as you do."
He could feel her annoyance through the bond, but she snuffed it out.
"You are right, of course,"
she eyed him. "And you needn't feel surprised to hear me admit it."
"I wasn't surprised," Gowan said. "I can feel your emotions, Gowan." "That was from something else entirely," he said. "I remembered something Sleet said a few days back. A joke I didn't understand until now."
He looked at her innocently. That, finally, earned a smile. A hint of one, but that was enough. She didn't smile much these days. Few of them did.
"In addition," he said, taking her reins and helping her dismount as they reached the command tent, "I'd never given much thought to the fact that a warder can, of course, ignore the 3 oaths. I wonder how often sisters have found that convenient."
"I hope not too often," Egwene said. A very diplomatic answer. Inside the command tent, they found Garth Bryn looking down through his now customary gateway. It was being maintained by a mousy gray whom Gowan didn't know. Bryn stepped to his map-littered desk, where Swan was attempting to bring order. He made a few notes on a map, nodding to himself, then looked to see who had entered.
"Mother," Bryn said, and took her hand to kiss her ring. "The battle seems to be going well," Egwene said, nodding to Swan. "We have held here well. You have plans to push forward, it seems?"
"We can't loiter here forever, Mother," Bryn said. "Queen Elaine has asked me to consider an advance farther into Kandor, and I think she is wise to do so. I worry that the Trollocs will pull back into the hills and brace themselves. You notice how they've been pulling more of the bodies off the field each night?"
"Yes."
Gowan could sense her displeasure. She wished the Aes Sedai had the strength to burn the Trolloc carcasses with the one power each day.
"They're gathering food," Bryn said. "They might decide to move eastward and try to get around us. We need to keep them engaged here, which might mean pushing into those hills. It would be costly, normally, but now..."
He shook his head, walking over and looking down through his gateway onto the front lines.
"Your Aes Sedai dominate this battlefield, Mother. I've never seen anything like it."
"There is a reason."